Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
He's strong. He's a winner, he's outspoken, and he's one of the biggest characters in football, Sol Campbell.
Campbell's got space to go into. Oh, he scored! It's a splendid show of initiative from Sol Campbell, and Arsenal have a goal.
Sol Campbell! It's a smashing header from Sol Campbell.
The Arsenal invincible and former England international had a captivating career and wants to get back into the game with his destiny in the dugout. In this special programme, you'll find out what it's like to be at the centre of one of the most controversial transfers of all time.
Sol Campbell returning to the ground where he served Spurs so well. But now representing Arsenal, he's been given a reception of someone who's committed a heinous crime.
Maybe if I'm 35, I might have looked at it in a totally different way. I'm 26. I want to win things. I want to go for it.
You'll hear about what it's like growing up on the streets of East London before becoming one of the biggest names in the game.
I was a competitor. I didn't give any quarter. I've been in the game from street football to playing for my country.
And you'll discover what it's like to be turned away time and again for management positions with no real explanation.
Do I believe I'm going to get a chance at the highest level? I will keep on pushing. I believe in myself. I just need someone else to. But yeah, the numbers don't lie. There's not a lot of bad managers out there.
You'll hear what it's like to feel misunderstood.
People are talking about when I was 20, 25, I'm 46 now. Talking about something like 20 years ago. Who's the same 20 years ago? Who?
You'll hear what it's like to feel sidelined.
At least give me a chance. At least see what I can do. You're given XYZ chances and probably the club's gone sideways. Well, give me a chance and see what I can do.
You'll hear what it's like being Sol Campbell. I'm Alex Crook, TalkSport reporter and commentator. I've known Sol for a while. I used to be a reporter down at Portsmouth and was there when he was brought to the club. There was a real buzz about the place as Pompey was signing a genuine winner. Two Premier Leagues, four FA Cups and a Champions League final on his CV. I always felt as if I wanted to get to know him a bit better during that spell. The real Sol, his life behind the scenes. Over the past few months, I've been doing just that. He's looking to get back into football management, and I've been tracking his mission to return to the touchline. We started by going back to his roots, Plaistow, East London, where he gave me a tour of the area in which he grew up.
So, Cecil Road, that's the school. So, I live down there. I used to play football here every day.
Really?
Yeah, every day.
What, on that bit of grass there? Or?
No, it's concrete when I was here, mate. Yeah. And there was an annex there, and then the concrete, and another annex, and then the school was all pushed around there. So we used to play here all the time.
Really?
Yeah, every day.
Obviously, you were the best kid in school?
No, one of them. No, there's some good players here.
Yeah?
Yeah, some good players.
Did you have a favourite teacher at school?
PE teacher, Mr. Munro, who was at Leicester Community. But when you're at these schools, I mean, they do all, you know, the teacher does everything, you know. So there's one who designates and does everything. There's a PE, and they've got, you know, they do the school work and then they do the PE in their spare time. So, yeah. So I just walk down all the way down here, drop in there, jump over the gates, and play football every day.
And at weekends as well?
Yeah, every day, or over the park, or street football.
So did you know from a young age that this is what you wanted to do for a career?
No. I just loved it.
What do you think you'd have been if you weren't a footballer?
An architect.
Yeah?
Yeah. Building. I love to build things, yeah.
And what about your family? Were they football fans? Did they encourage you?
No, not really.
No?
No. I think for me it was, they love football, but it, you know, actually actually preferred horse riding. You know,
you're a bit big for a jockey.
No. Obviously, they loved little bet on dogs and horses back in the days.
So I guess Walthamstow dogs not far from here, is it?
Yeah. But it was just all at this betting shop.
You'll have to direct me.
Yeah, up here, turn left. Sorry. Oh no, you can't turn left. No. So you've got to go around. Okay. Go around.
This is your road here, is it?
This is road. Yeah, East Road. This is my road.
See, I guess when you were younger, there wouldn't have been cars necessarily. So many cars.
No, there's cars. There's cars.
There's cars.
Yeah, I had to dodge the cars, and then he got knocked over once, and playing street football.
I was going to say street football.
I was playing out here.
Did you use the walls as goals?
Yep. Yeah. Walls as goals. Yeah. I just love competing. Just loved it.
And you love winning.
Everyone loves winning. you know more when you lose, but everyone loves winning, yeah. This is it here, number 9.
We stopped outside the home where Sol grew up, a small terraced house on the outskirts of West Ham Park. It's amazing to think this was where he'd grown up, alongside 11 other siblings.
And how old were you when you lived here? From what age until when?
0 to... on and off to 19, 20 nearly, yeah.
And for most of that time, you were known as Sol Zia Campbell.
Sol Zia Jeremiah Campbell.
When did that change to Sol?
That changed, I think, on my first tour with England at 14. And on the tannoy, Souzia, whatever, it's understandable you're going to get, you're going to make a mistake. But that's why I kind of changed it to nice and easy Sol. And for about 15, 16, that was it from there. Nice and easy Sol, you can't really muck it up.
And we stood opposite the house where you grew up as well. Just looks like a normal mid-terrace London home.
It is. It is. It's a big part of my life. I learnt a lot here. Ups and downs. This area taught me a lot.
And what sort of neighbourhood was it back then? Different to what we're seeing here today?
Do you know what? I think it was rough, but you're none the wiser. None the wiser. And I think back in those days, you grow up, if people know you in the area, just leave you alone. I came from a big family. But also everybody, 80% of the street knew each other. And even if you didn't know the rest, they knew of you. So that's kind of gone now.
It's obviously a very cosmopolitan area today, maybe not so much when you were growing up. As a young black boy in East London, did you ever witness or experience any kind of racism or racial discrimination?
I mean, it's always been mixed here, and I've grown up like that, so my head and how I look at life is so wide in a totally different way, so it's all encompassing, because I grew up with black people, Indian people, whites. I grew up with everybody, so I'm so wired in a different way, so when it does raise its head, it's just like I don't understand it. I don't get it. I know it exists, but I just don't get it. It's only, when you go into football that you probably come across it. But now I think, kids are experiencing that, because social media, things like that, a lot earlier now. So that has changed, because the whole thing has just opened up. And access on both sides has opened up.
Sol made his debut for Tottenham Hotspur in December 1992, coming on as a sub and scoring against Chelsea. Having heard they didn't encourage him to become a footballer as a youngster, I wanted to hear how his family reacted to his first ever professional appearance and goal.
So you made your debut for Tottenham against Chelsea as a teenager. You'd have been living on this street in this house that we're stood opposite. So you'd have come home buzzing with your boots under your arm probably.
I wasn't buzzing, I lost the game. So I wasn't completely buzzing. I scored, but I wasn't buzzing.
and was it a rapturous welcome from the family? Well done, pats on the back.
No, because for me it's I actually didn't know I was going to play, so I was in the squad, but I didn't know I was going to play. So I was thinking that I might have been in the stands. So, and that's normal. I'm 18. I'm playing well for the youth team. They could have just brought me in for experience or whatever. But I made the bench. And that was a surprise for me, because it was back end of the season, and I came on. So it was fantastic. Scored my debut, but we lost the game. But why would my family want to go? Because I could be in the stands. I wasn't like a regular. I was still a youth team player.
Everyone likes a pat on the back, though.
I think for me, it's, you know, when you become a regular and you know you're gonna you're stable and you're part of the team, then yeah, obviously your family want to come and watch you play, things like that. But if it's, I didn't know I was going to play, it was, you know, took the train and blah, 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 and then all of a sudden I think I'm in the squads, in the stands, and now on the bench, you know, it's like, you know, why would your family come and see you on the bench or in stands? Sitting next to them, you know, it's not worth it for them.
What sort of relationship did you have with your dad in particular?
Oh, Dad was strong. He was a strong man, a proud man from Jamaica, you know, one of the first immigrants over here. It wasn't easy. And then I'm the last one out of 12, so, you know, they're probably kind of tired by then. But I'm the last one, so nothing's really expected of me, really, because nothing's come before. And then you look at the area, this is the area, what, you know, yes, you know, you can always make it, you never know, but you don't really hear about too many people making it from here. And it's tough around here. You know, it's everything's stacked against you. So to make it out of here, whatever you do, in a positive way, it's fantastic.
It was refreshing to hear Sol so animated about where he grew up. We took a short walk from his house to the row of pitches where he first started kicking a ball around as a young boy.
This is West Ham Park, my local park. Growing up, just live around the corner. East Road. This is the dusty part.
Gravel.
You know, I actually didn't play on here too many times because you did get really, really dusty. So I just kept to the grass or streets.
Did you stick yourself up front?
Back in those days, you play everywhere. Defence, midfield, attack. You played everywhere. There was no kind of fixed, except the goalkeeper was kind of fixed, but everyone else was fluid.
And it was morning till night. Your mum would have been coming over after dark to get you back home for bed.
No, well, I did, you know, I had to sneak in sometimes. No, but at a certain time, this would close, you know, and then you had to kind of go and play in the streets. But if it was too late, I had to kind of knock on the door and get my brother to let me in because I didn't want my mum and dad hearing me coming in, you know, playing football all day long.
I was struck by the amount of people coming up to Sol and wishing him well.
To see people like you to come back to your roots.
Yeah, it's good.
That's what it's all about. Yeah. Well, thank you.
How old were you when you got spotted by your first professional club?
12.
Who was that?
That was West Ham. So I was playing at Newham and they invited me over to play or to train and things like that. So at 12, West Ham.
You weren't there for very long though?
No.
Who did you support back then?
I didn't really have a team. My local team was West Ham.
Yeah.
But, you know, I grew up in the... There's quite a lot of hooliganism going around at that time. So, and plus I couldn't afford to go to a club. Didn't have no money to get into a club. But West Ham was one of my first teams I went to. But my friend said, look, come along. Last 15 minutes. And you can watch the game. I watched one game, I don't know, you know, who were playing. Obviously, West Ham were playing. I don't know who they were playing against. And that was it.
At Upton Park?
Upton Park, yeah. Nowhere else. But, you know, I had no money to go watch football. Mm. It was like, why I just play here and just, you know, play with my friends and play for my school, play for my district, play for my Sunday league team.
And could you have imagined then on this gravelly pitch, could you have dreamt then that you'd end up at Arsenal one day and invincible?
No. That's the beautiful thing about football.
Welcome back to Being Sol Campbell. With me, TalkSport reporter Alex Crook. Over the past few months, I've been getting to know the real Sol and following his pursuit to get back into football management. Following his days playing street football as a youngster, Sol would go on to win two Premier Leagues and a hat-trick of FA Cups with an illustrious, all-conquering Arsenal side.
History has been made. One of the greatest achievements since English football began. Arsenal have gone through an entire league campaign without losing.
But that hadn't always been the plan. In July 2001, Sol was part of one of the most controversial transfers of all time, moving to the Gunners from their deadly rivals, Tottenham Hotspur.
Saul Campbell returning to the ground where he served Spurs so well. But now representing Arsenal, he's been given a reception of someone who's committed a heinous crime.
Many of them, as you can see, are holding balloons. They bear the word Judas, and they are making their feelings plain towards their one-time hero, who now lines up for their most fierce rivals.
Looking at grass, yeah. It's not too soggy.
No.
Be all right.
We next met for a stroll in Battersea Park, near to where Sol now lives. 20 years on from the move, I wanted to hear more about the mental impact it had on Sol and whether it was still something he thinks about today. Tottenham fans, even those who weren't around at the time, still view you in a particular light.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Which is ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Why do you think it's ridiculous?
Because this happened such a long time ago. What, you're going to start worrying about me when I'm 80 years old?
And
ridiculous. And I think, you know, with that scenario, it's like, you're 25, I was 25 and 46, and like, what are you doing? You've probably done things, you know, when you were 25 or 20 or 15 or whatever. It doesn't even make any sense now. Move on. It's like, new team, new stadium, new type of lifestyle going forward, passing it around like a campfire story. It's ridiculous. I think for me, it is what it is. They all made their decisions and that's it, and you just accept it and you move on.
Despite Sol's clear desire to put the past behind him, it's certainly not a move that's been forgotten by Spurs fans. And for a selection of them, the hatred is still alive and well.
Yeah, it's football. I mean, it's a game. It's a game. You know, people going way beyond it, way beyond. And they touched on surfaces that, you know, on race, on you know, when football is mentioned. That's the trouble, really. People are just going way beyond football and forgot they went way beyond football and started encroaching on who you are, your personality, your family, things like that, which was just, you know, bang out of order. That was not right. That you couldn't get away with that now. You could not get away with it. You get put inside or you get a criminal record. So different now. Back then, people got away with it.
What was the worst thing that happened to you?
Worst thing? I mean, just the whole thingy, like you know, who I am and what I'm trying to do, and, you know, people saying I'm this, saying I'm that. It's like, it's just constant from MPs, from fans, from papers, from news writers, radio. The whole lot, everyone had a say. It's ridiculous.
But you said they could have been put inside for it. So.
Oh, no, like all the, you know, the chants at the grounds and things like that. I'm not going to go into that because I just can't be bothered, because it's such a long time ago. And people know what they did and they got away with it. Some didn't, but, you know, a lot of people got away with it.
It was clear to me that despite his success at Arsenal, the move was still something that haunted Sol, and the targeting of himself, his family and his private life was something that made him naturally more cautious. Sol had a difficult relationship with the media during his playing career. We sat down at his house in Chelsea to discuss this.
Cup of tea, cup of coffee.
I asked Sol if he wished he'd been more open with the Fleet Street press pack.
Back then, you know, media were quite sneaky in a lot of ways, and you had to find your way. And I didn't really have a support system around me, like a big PR system, just like to kind of sieve out all these kind of interviews and things like that. So I was very wary as a young boy. I was very shy. It's hard to believe, but I was very shy growing up as a kid. Very shy, incredibly shy. It only came out, you know, me when I was in the football field. So I was very wary. I mean, so for me, I was taken the wrong way through being shy and being like, oh, what's going on here? Nine brothers and two sisters. I'm the last one. So really, I didn't talk a lot in my house. I didn't have no time to talk. People have to realise the circumstances that made me who I am and made my career. I'm very shy because all those brothers and sisters in front of me, I get not a word in edgeway. So I was either in the garden or out on the streets playing football. When I came back at home, I had to shut up. I couldn't talk. All my thoughts were in my mind. That's why I'm a thinker and things like that. So they've got to realise that that's the reason why I was a loner. And plus, I was very wary of people. Very wary. I was brought up to be like that. To be wary of people, new people coming into my life. That's normal. It was kind of the, it was like, oh, you got to be, you're that good. You got to be shouting. You got to be here. You got to be there. You got to be shouting from the rooftops. You got to be big and everything. But no, I was shy. I didn't want people to know about me. And people misconstrued that and kind of cross wires and really, really got me wrong massively.
Something else that had always struck me was the way Sol had been portrayed as a loner in the press during that time. I wondered what he made of that label.
A loner? When you look at it, how's that a loner? I got a kid, I got married, kids, friends. That doesn't sound like a loner to me. I'm quite easygoing. I'm happy. I love banter. In life, how many friends can you say, you know, on one hand? If you've got 10, 15, 20 good friends, you're probably lying. Football's the same. Huh? You know, you may know acquaintances, but how many true friends do we know? I'd probably say like 3 or 4, and that's it. Yeah, and that's it. You've not got 10, 15, 20. Let's take it back. Working class background, not a penny to rub together, just love from the family. Football comes along, you really concentrate on this. You can't let it slip. You concentrate, you work hard, you push everything to the side, and you literally go for it and say, this is what I can do, and I love doing this. You don't muck around, you don't play around, you just concentrate on football. So if I'm classed as someone being a loner at, say, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, maybe 25, for success, I'll do that again.
Sol's answer was intriguing. I think he's a different person from his playing days, but I found it striking he said he would go through it all again in order to succeed in football. As it was such a divisive transfer, I asked Sol if the backlash and the perceptions that came with it had prevented him from getting a job in management.
So for me, you know, there's other people who've done things and drink and driving and all that and blah, 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 and the list goes on. Got jobs. But if that's the only thing stopping me from getting a job, then what kind of human beings are we? If that's the only thing stopping me getting a job, you know, life is, I'm trying to kind of balance things. I'm trying to balance the arguments. But if that's the only thing stopping me, so what I do, my talent is not stopping me other than what I did. And other guys in front of me have done worse things, not as bad or whatever, but got jobs or get opportunities to get jobs time and time again. I'm a winner. I won things. I broke records. It's like football should be just about that. Don't you want someone in your club who can do that? Or the potential to do that? Don't you want someone like that? If you're a serious club and you want to get to the top, that should not bother you. It's like here you are. There's other people who've done worse things, got jobs. It's like, so is there a bit of, is it people just using that as an excuse? Probably.
Coming up on Being Sol Campbell, you'll hear from one of Sol's former teammates, ex-Arsenal winger Theo Walcott.
He would rank for me, it would be just below Thierry for me to some extent. I'm quite surprised that Sol hasn't even got a statue as well.
Plus, you'll hear the inside story from one of Sol's most difficult moments.
No help, no one was giving me help. I had to sort myself out and I did, but not everyone could do that.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Welcome back to Being Sol Campbell. With me, TalkSport reporter Alex Crook. Over the past few months, I've been getting to know the real Sol and following his pursuit to get back into football management. Having heard about the mental impact of Sol's controversial move across North London, I wanted to hear more about his drive to succeed when he was at Arsenal. I next caught up with him at their home, the magnificent Emirates Stadium. We stood by the lush green pitch, with the hoardings all around us stamped proudly with the many trophies the Gunners have won.
That's your banner there as well, 49 unbeaten, wasn't it? It was the record, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Played 38, won 26, drawn 12, lost 0.
It was a stark reminder of the heady days that Sol had seen at one of England's biggest football clubs.
I just remember the, you know, for me, the quality players I played with at the time, they're world class.
Thierry Henry, fantastic goal! Absolutely brilliant from Henry!
Bergkamp, oh, a sublime goal by Dennis Bergkamp. Pure magic from the Dutch master.
Those guys will be remembered forever. Not just at Arsenal, just at world football, really. Great players, and it's a privilege for me to play alongside them. You know, fantastic. You know, human beings, and obviously great footballers as well.
Someone who I knew looked up to Sol during his time at Arsenal was their ex-winger Theo Walcott, who was signed by the club when he was just 16. I sat down with Theo to ask him about the duo's relationship.
Walking into the dressing room, all these stars, all these players that have won leagues, and my idol Thierry Henry. And I was starstruck from day one with all of them. But the one thing, when I was introduced to Sol for the first time, he made me feel really at home straight away and comfortable around the environment. And I didn't get that sense of that sort of nerves around him. But he wanted to try and get me to come out of my shell a little bit more. Him and Ashley Cole, but particularly Sol. Ashley was great for Sol because Ashley got his sort of giddy side out. So he's sort of his kid side out, and Ashley was a bubbly character. He was young, he was fresh. And when them two were together, they were like brothers, like generally brothers. They really were. It was like Sol was the big brother to Ashley Cole was the little brother. And seeing the first training session of Sol, he would treat me like a man on the field as well, which was really great. He'd make sure everyone's in position. He was talking constantly on the field in training. He would talk to Arsene Wenger on a regular occurrence, just him and Arsene alone, just talking. I don't know what they were talking about, but he just showed the man and the aura he had around him that Arsene was really respecting his sort of, you know, his opinion on anything day to day, which I felt that just says it a lot for the man he is.
You obviously played with some massive names in your time at Arsenal. Where do you think Sol Campbell would rank in terms of their list of legends?
Sol in his own right. It's hard to compare him to people like Thierry Henry. A lot of people look at strikers. They always do. Look at forwards, wingers, strikers. But Sol, for me, would probably... The fact that he's gone, I said before, he's gone from Tottenham, and the amount of stick he would have got from moving to Arsenal, who, you know, Tottenham won't win anything, and then Arsenal, and he wins everything, basically, and scores in Champions League final. He would rank, for me, it would be just below Thierry for me. Thierry, because of Thierry being my idol, and what Thierry did for me, but Sol, as more as a leader, 100% more the leader than Thierry. You know, to some extent, I'm quite surprised that Sol hasn't even got a statue as well, because that's the sort of man and the impression he brought to Arsenal.
But along with the highs, there were lows too. In particular, the 1st of February 2006, when Arsenal played West Ham at Highbury, and Sol had a first half to forget.
Now there's a way through for Rio Coca. This could be a surprise lead, and is... West Ham are in front.
Poor defending by Campbell. What is he doing?
Sol was taken off by Arsene Wenger at half-time and the Gunners went on to lose 3-2. Sol wasn't there for the final whistle. He'd left the ground entirely immediately after being hooked from the action. After the game, Wenger claimed Sol was not well. I wanted to know what had been troubling him that evening.
I look back on it with great sadness, really. I look back and I say, that wasn't me. But then I have to think about how did you get to that level? You know, the pressure was immense on me. I was injured. No help. No one was giving me help. No one was checks and balances with people, what they were writing, what they were saying. I had to sort myself out, and I did, but not everyone could do that. Not everyone can do that, and then, you know, a few months later, you know, scoring a Champions League final. Not many people can do that. You have to remember that, you know, I got through that.
Did it affect your mental health at the time?
You know, everyone's got their threshold, and, you know, I kind of rebooted and got myself, you know, together and started playing the game I loved. And that's what you've got to remember. I got back on the pitch and playing quality football. And then, remember, I got back into the England side as well. So that's what you've got to see. You see one little negative, but then after that, there's a lot of positive. That's what people got to remember.
Knowing that incident eventually led Wenger to sell Sol, it was interesting to hear that he felt he had no help at the time. Theo and Sol were also teammates briefly with England. Sol had an amazing career with the Three Lions, playing at six major tournaments in the team known as the Golden Generation.
Yes! Sol Campbell puts England in front!
But despite picking up 73 caps for his country, he only captained the national team on a handful of occasions. Back in 2014, Sol wrote a book about his life and career and his lack of opportunity to lead out his national side, which he was interviewed about at the time.
I had everything. I was growing in stature in my game for my clubs, and my performances for England were fantastic. I still believe that I was the wrong colour. I think if I was white, I think definitely my chances of being captain would have been enhanced.
I wanted to revisit those statements. As we walked around the stadium, we ended up next to the statue of Sol's former teammate and ex-Arsenal and England captain, Tony Adams. It seemed a fitting place to ask if he still stood by those comments 7 years later.
I definitely were captain a lot more, for sure. You become, you know, arguably one of the best defenders in the world. You've captained your side, and you go from being captain to comparing captain to vice captain to no captain, and you've become, you know, one of the best defenders in the world. And consistency of football games and commanding. So you know, for me, I would have definitely captained more than you know, three times for sure.
Do you think that was a conscious decision right from the top of the FA, or was it what you would call unconscious bias?
Who knows? I don't know decisions, but all I know what I did as a footballer. You know, I became, you know, one of the best in the world, not just in England, in the world for at least 2-3 years, and I just went from being that captain to, or potential being captain, full-time captain, to vice captain, to no captain. I just went...
And nobody explained it?
No.
Did you ever go looking for answers?
Why should it be down to me to look for answers? It's not down to me. It's down to the powers of be to say, you know, I think he should be, or the manager, or whatever, at the time.
So I think over the same period, Michael Owen wore the armband 8 times, and if you compare your two...
It's different.
Characteristics.
It's totally different, yeah. So
you would say you were more equipped to be...
You've answered the question.
Yeah. But you would say you had more attributes to be a leader than Michael Owen?
Well, a lot more, yeah. All of them, yeah. Surely I should have been like a contender. I think back then it was such a different type of, you know, environment. I mean, people were looking at different things. So, you know, they're looking at, you know, they're not looking at characters. They're looking at, you know, I don't know, sponsors, they're looking at this, they're looking at that. So it shouldn't be like that.
Sol was clearly still deeply wounded by the fact he was unable to lead his country on more occasions. I asked Theo Walcott what he made of the situation.
73 caps, and to captain your national team 3 times is embarrassing. I don't get it. Whoever's captain, yet in their own right, may be good, but for me, there was no other better leader than Sol, because he left everything on the field. Honestly, every time I've come out of a game, his whole kit was just drenched and mud everywhere, and his face was blood, and just generally, that's how much it meant to him. And to only captain England 3 times for me is, yeah, that's really frustrating and really hurts, to be honest, because someone like him, as a man he was, he should have captained England many more occasions. Because as well, a lot of the England guys, even my little stint with that era and that generation of players, would always come for him, and he was the he was the man that you would always hear. If you were just walking, you just hear him somewhere, a bit on his soul. You just know someone's talking to him from the staff, from, you know, coaching staff, the players. You just knew that if you got a problem, we'd go see Sol about it. So yeah, that surprises me massively.
As we finished our tour of the Emirates, we ended up in Celebration Corner, next to the statue of Arsenal legend Thierry Henry.
Talk to me about Thierry. If you had to pick one player, the best that you ever played with, would it be him?
Yeah, definitely one of the best, Thierry. You know, he's just a marvel. He's just an incredible player, you know. But his passion for the game is just incredible and relentless.
Obviously had his dabble in management as well. He had a spell with the Belgian national team as assistant. Yeah. Nearly got the Bournemouth job. Did you go for that job?
Yeah, I think the Bournemouth job is great. I mean, you know, it's a great job. It's a great job. I'd love a chance like that, end of the season, with a team. You know, see how well you can do. It's almost like a little kind of give you 6 months, see what you can do, and then we go from there. I'll take that opportunity all day long.
How many jobs have you applied for out of interest?
Nine. Applied for nine clubs. Nine clubs.
How many interviews?
One.
Only one out of nine. Who was that with?
That was with Sunderland.
What, recently?
Yeah, recently. Yeah.
I mean, how do you deal with that when you suffer a setback? You've got a strong willpower, a strong enough character to come through it. As you get rejected, and in lots of cases, I imagine you don't even get a rejection. You just get ignored. Mm. How do you dust yourself down and apply for the next job?
You keep on going, you know. You understand that, you know, they're on a different path. They don't want to, you know, they don't want to talk to you. They've probably already chosen their manager. I feel, you know, it's good to kind of apply and say, look, hey, I'm here. If it doesn't work out, you can always come back and, you know, here's my CV. For me, it's all about process. It's all about, yes, if you're fixed on that manager, it's fine, but then you still have that interview process with another four or five managers for your own self. You know, you gotta go through that journey as well as a CEO or a sporting director or a technical director or chairman or owner. You should go through that because you never know that you might be missing something. You might be kind of saying, well, these are the list, I'm only going to interview one. But it's all about doing your job properly and kind of opening it up and talking to other managers, because you never know, that manager might not work out and you might have to go back to someone else before you interviewed, I don't know, 6 weeks before or 6 months before the last season and said, you know what, I actually like that conversation, let me revisit that. I mean, that's for you. That's just doing your job properly, really.
How long do you give yourself until you give up, or do you never give up?
You know, I want to be a manager, I want to do more, obviously, but, you know, I'll wait and I'll keep going. But if it doesn't happen, you know, that's a possibility. You never know. I've done League One, I've done League Two. I want to move up. You know, I've got all the capabilities. I've got the team behind me. Keep going. And hopefully a fit comes and then someone gets it and say, yeah, let's, you know, even if it's like a, you know, back in the season, a top club, and it's 6 months, last 6 months of that particular season, I'll take it and see, you know, I'll take my chances. You know, I'm ready to do that.
Nine clubs, but just one interview. It didn't seem to add up to me, considering Sol's illustrious playing career. Since we finished recording, Sol has applied unsuccessfully for the England under-21 job, another setback to his coaching aspirations. I asked Theo Walcott for his view.
For me, that's just very poor. You're not even going to listen to the man's ideas, his experiences with the players he's played with, the managers he's played under, what he's won as a player, and the person he is. He got the best out of players, because the amount of respect he had in that dressing room and on the field itself said a lot. And as well, it must be really sickening and frustrating for Sol, because he's gone through this on numerous occasions. And at times, you just think, to give up, you would, but that's the sort of man Sol is. He would never give up on what he wants to set out going forward in his career and his managerial career going forward in the future. He's got so much to give, and he's not going to stop until he's got what he wants and what he achieves.
Welcome back to Being Sol Campbell with me, TalkSport reporter Alex Crook. Over the past few months, I've been getting to know the real Sol and hearing about his willingness to get back into football management. After Sol revealed to me that he'd apply for nine jobs but only heard back from one of them during our day at the Emirates, I wanted to discover more about Sol the manager. One club where Sol was captain was Portsmouth under Harry Redknapp. I set up a meeting between Sol and Harry to see what Harry made of Sol in the dressing room.
The first thing that attracted me was just such a fantastic player. You talk about great centre-halves, and honestly, he's the easiest man in the world to deal with. He took a massive, massive drop in wages to what he'd have been earning at Arsenal. I mean, our training ground was so bad, it had to be seen to be believed. He'd come from Arsenal, where, you know, where they'd had all the facilities in the world. We had no hot water, I think, for about 6 months. Not once did he ever complain about the facilities or just got on with it. Set an unbelievable example, really.
What do you remember, Sol, about that training ground? I remember it quite vividly.
I mean, Harry puts it in a lovely way. Don't get me wrong, it was IO. But the main thing for me is, like, with Harry, just got the right characters through the door who wanted to play for him, wanted to play football again, and just got on with it. And, it kind of brought us together, really, as a team, in a nice little way.
Yeah.
And we really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed my time down at Portsmouth.
Did you see management skills in Sol? Obviously, you saw leadership skills because you made him your captain. Did you see that he could one day go on and become a manager?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was a leader. He was a captain wherever he played. But what Sol needs... He needs, like everybody, a club where you've got a chance and you've got some decent players to start with. It's been hard. I mean, when you go and manage, no disrespect to Southend, I don't know what you're supposed to do. I mean, Bobby Moore went to Southend when he finished his career and managed. And then people went, oh, yeah, he was a great player, but he wasn't a manager. He could have been the best manager if he'd have gone to West Ham that West Ham ever had. He just went to Southend where he had absolutely no chance to be successful. And Sol's a bit like that. He's done a great job, you know, with his first club. Then he moves to Southend. I don't know, really, you know, what he's supposed to achieve there. He needs an opportunity at a club with some real potential and the right tools to work with, and I'm sure he'd make a great success of it.
Having heard so much about his ambition to get back on the touchline, I was eager to see him in action. He invited me to watch him coach QPR's under-23s at their training centre in Hounslow.
Let's go. Same thing. Spare man, same thing. Yeah. Let's go.
The Championship club have been giving Sol the chance to train their youth team in order to build up more coaching experience. Also at the session was Andy Cole, the Premier League's third highest goal scorer and one of Sol's closest friends.
Drop left.
Make the pitch, step him in. Good feet. Free kick.
Good feet.
I caught up with Andy on the sidelines as he watched Sol put those QPR youngsters through their paces.
What have we picked up on so far? How's it going?
Yeah, it's been going well. I think the boys are taking to it very well. It was the first time I've ever worked with Sol. And the way Sol likes to do things, you know, a little bit different. You know, he likes the small-sided games. He likes to get the feet going early doors. So, yeah, it looks like they're enjoying it.
And he was here for hours setting up. He'd done a workout himself before they started putting out the cones and the balls. The pylons.
No, that is typical. So very, very methodical in what he does. You know, he wants everything perfect. You know, to be fair, we're not far from Heathrow, and he looked a little bit like Heathrow by the time he finished. You know, but like I said, you know, he's very thorough, and I think that's one of the reasons why I enjoy working with him.
Sol has had two management jobs: Macclesfield, where he pulled off a miraculous escape from relegation, and Southend United, which ended in relegation after the pandemic interrupted their season. Andy was his assistant at both clubs.
What impressed me is that he's willing to do those hard yards. So clearly this is not someone who just expects to turn up and have a team of people behind him doing stuff, setting out the session, because that's what would happen if you were a Premier League manager. But obviously the clubs that you guys have worked at, Southend and Macclesfield, it's all hands on deck, isn't it? You don't have a big staff.
Yeah, to be fair, he loves doing it himself. You know, that's why I love working with him, because he likes to do everything himself. Like I said, he's methodical in what he wants. You know, he's very, very meticulous in what he wants to be done.
Part of the reason we're doing this documentary, I think, is to change certain perceptions from when Sol was a player. Do you think those perceptions and the fact that maybe he was considered a bit aloof, maybe slightly strange, slightly withdrawn, is that a reason that maybe some chairman have put off?
You can't be judged by what someone or perceptions of people's personalities are. You know, we are what we are for a reason. You know, I mean, if Sol was following everyone out, they'd be calling him a sheep. Now he's a little bit different than everybody else, and everyone's questioning that he's a little bit different. You know, like I said before, and you can only judge an individual on the job he's given, or try not judge an individual on what he's done in his playing career. And like I said, Sol has done just that in his playing career, one of the best. Now give him an opportunity to see if he can manage it at that next level.
It was an eye-opener for me watching Sol coach. The way the young players responded to him really well. They seemed eager to impress, and Sol made sure he was talking constantly.
Come on, balls there, plenty of balls, come on! Six versus three, there's plenty of space! Plenty of space, find the spare man!
I was speaking to the Hereford manager, Josh Gowling, the other week. He's one of nine black managers in the top seven divisions in English football. That clearly, that number doesn't match up when you look at the number of black players. Is that a factor in why Sol's struggling to get a job?
Is it a factor? Well, I'm not going to sit on the fence. Yeah, it is a factor. You know, we have to be brutally honest. You know, the numbers you just touched on there do not stack up. They don't stack up for a reason. For me personally, you can't judge an individual by the colour of his skin. You know, you must give an opportunity to people like myself, like Sol, people who do want to manage and, like, judge them on that. You know, just like you judge when you was a player. It took a little bit of time for black players to be judged as good players. You know, now the judge says just that. Now the next level is management. And if you listen to Sol speak, you know, that's what he wants to be judged on now. Giving the opportunity to manage at the next level, judge me on that. Yeah, not what people believe of me or the perception people might have of me. You know, judge me on my managerial skills.
And how do we get to that next level? Does it need a change right at the top of the game, right at the top of the Football Association?
Yeah, of course it needs a change. I think we all know it needs to change, but we all know perceptions have to change. You know, perceptions, like you touched on there, at the highest level. Because people have to start believing that black players can manage at the highest level. And I think in Sol's case, he's been given jobs at clubs that have struggled. Mm-hmm. You know, he's done an unbelievable job when he's at Macclesfield. Unfortunately, we couldn't do as well as we would have liked to do at Southend due to the constraints we was under. But in saying that, I still think Sol did a fantastic job at Southend.
Have a drink, lads!
After the session, I sat down with Sol to discuss his future and the reasons he believes he's currently being held back.
I know you'll say that you want to be your own man, but if you could compare your management style to any of the current top managers in the Premier League, which one would you say you're most akin to?
I don't know. I think, you know, you've got Pep, you know, the way he plays football, you know, the possession, and also having players, you know, advance, you know, the right back, left back, kind of advance in midfield positions, you know, really holding and possession.
I mean, the big theme from our conversations is and even from speaking to Andy Cole as well, is that you believe you can be a manager right at the top end of the game, you could achieve things. Do you still believe in your heart of hearts that you will get that opportunity at the top level?
You know, if a few things, you know, slot into place, yeah. I totally believe that. I totally believe that you can get that opportunity and things are meant to be, they go your way. But if you get a situation or you get the scenario or you get the kind of, you know, CEOs and technical directors and sporting directors and enough people don't say yes around the table, then, well, no, it's not going to happen. And, you know, that's something I've got to really think about. You've given, you know, ABC chances and they've failed, you know, left, right and centre, and they're still getting jobs and, or, you know, behind the scenes, their character is all over the place, but they still manage to get a job, you know, and you come along and you say to yourself, well, what's the barrier when it comes to me? I mean, it's just, yeah, it's just perception or, I don't know, is it colour, is it perception, is it like they don't think I'm experienced enough or whatever, you know, but then there's other people who have no experience getting really top jobs.
The English Football League currently implements a law known as the Rooney Rule, which says clubs should interview at least one candidate from a black and minority ethnic background. I wanted to know what Sol made of the law.
I think, you know, when you look at it, I don't know, many associations have tried an affirmative action where you kind of literally, you've got to have someone working in there. Does it need to get to that level? It may do, who knows. But then you look at, say, QPR, where I'm training at the moment, there's a lot of black coaches and managers. I think QPR's Rangers is quite unique, and I think they don't get enough praise for it. I've come back in. Yes, I know, you know, Les and Ferdinand, you know, he's here as well. Chris Ramsey as well. So, you know, that I know guys here and they're really friendly and they're open, but there's a lot of black coaches here and competent coaches and, you know, they've been training here, been working here for many, many years. So, you know, Queen's Park Rangers, hats off to them. It's fantastic. So it can happen and be a really positive environment.
I guess that's a reflection now of the area that the club is situated in as well, but you would probably argue that isn't necessarily replicated in other parts of the country.
This club is unique, I think, worldwide. I don't think another club's like this in the world. In other environments, other businesses, you know, we've got that problem of, you know, people employ who look like them or kind of look like them. That's, you know, that's written down and there's research on that and that's out there. So do we need black CEOs? Do we need sporting directors, technical directors to be of colour for it to diversify, you know, in their clubs? I like to think, you know, people are open-minded. They don't have to, you know, go all that way. You know, and they just want to employ and want that diversity, want that kind of the quality from different areas. And everyone brings something different to the table, and very talented. So I love a mixture. But obviously, it's not replicated up and down the country or around the world.
Just looking at some of your England teammates, Steven Gerrard obviously has just won the title at Rangers. Frank Lampard is being talked about as possibly the next England under-21 manager. Wayne Rooney has gone in at Derby. Even Gary Neville got parachuted in at Valencia and had a nightmare. Why do you think those players, who you are at least on a par with in terms of what you achieved in your playing career, probably eclipse some of those?
You can put John Terry at Villa. He's having a great time.
Why do they get the opportunities that you don't?
Who knows? Maybe you know, what if I had the magic wand, yeah, I'll be in there. But I mean, give me an opportunity to have an interview. You know, you never know. I might be able to change your mind. As I said before, you got to talk to the person. You got to talk to the person. Who the guy who wants to, you know, manage a football club. Talk to him, not hearsay, not kind of whatever happened 10, 15 years ago. People change. People are allowed to change. The likes of me and Coley, we just want an opportunity just to kind of, you know, not just give us a job, we can actually do the job. We can do it. We've been under pressure. We know what pressure looks like. You know, pressure's our friend now. You know, when the big jobs come up, we can handle all that.
See, if this was a job interview, I'd give you a job.
Thank you. Where do I sign?
And I meant it. As a result of my time following Sol, I'm convinced he does have the drive and determination to be a successful manager. I was impressed with the way he coached and the unwavering belief in his own ability. The question now is, will somebody give him the chance to live out his management dream?
I think if they're into you, they're into you. And then you've not got the job, but you've got a chance. At least give me a chance. At least see what I can do. You're giving XYZ chances and probably the club's gone sideways and, well, give me a chance and see what I can do.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.